Yo.
Hello.
How are you? Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing amazing. We just got our lottery numbers for our housing for next semester.
Lottery numbers. Is that when you like select?
Yeah. So you fill out a form of what you want, and then it goes in order. That's one cool. Through, you know, however many students.
But is that like seniors, juniors, sophomores, freshmen?
Yeah.
Makes sense.
So the seniors have the lowest numbers, which are the best. And yeah. I am number 4, which is insane. Which means there's 3 people in front of me, and there are 8 of the so-called Seahawk suites.
Seahawk suites.
Which are about double the size of the normal rooms in the
cool.
best.
So you're getting a Seahawk suite.
So I'm getting a Seahawk suite. I'm so excited about
number
it.
Number 4.
It
That's
has a living
crazy.
Room.
Does it really?
Yeah.
I need to come visit then. I can sleep on the couch.
Yeah. You can sleep
awesome.
In the foyer too.
I could sleep in the atrium.
Yeah.
So is that you and one roommate or two? Or 3?
3. It's a suite. So 4.
Oh, I see.
People.
So that makes sense. And so then you and your squad just automatically gets that.
Yeah.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was my afternoon. How about
That's
you,
buddy? Awesome. When does that happen? When's that day?
Well, we find out officially what room we get on May 1st.
Oh, it's not like something you have to sit in there and like do.
It was you last just... year. That was fun. It was like an auction. It was like lottery number 3, number 3, number 3. And number 3 is not there. We go on to number 4.
Oh, so it's like in person. Oh my
That's
God.
What it was last year. It was sick.
That's
it was so
terrifying.
He was like, if you're not there by 5:30, you will not get a room.
Holy shit. Could you imagine? That makes more sense. Just submit your choices and they'll just fit you in whatever your first choice is if it's still available.
Number 3 goes, room 407. 407. Sold to number 3. Number 4, number 4, number 4.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we got some things we can talk about here on the program.
Oh, Brian.
My show opens tomorrow, so I'm not here mentally. Even though it's really, Songs for New World is not that. I mean, it would be so much harder if it was a 4-person cast. Let me tell you. Let me tell you, I would be deceased.
Well, luckily, you already know most of the words to Hamilton. So the deck of the Spanish sailing ship should be a breeze from the promo pic I saw.
So this is the where did that get posted?
Instagram.
No, today? Oh, I haven't
There's already
seen
comments
that yet.
About it.
Wait, this must be recent.
Oh, it is.
Oh, it's so recent.
Welcome back to the audio podcast where we
Everyone's
only talk
saying
about
Hamilton.
Things.
I wear this for 2 seconds in the show. It's not even, I sing on the deck of a Spanish sailing ship, which is the, not technically, it's the fake opening. And
opening?
There's a real opening, The New World, and then there's this, which is like the first solo.
Yeah.
And I thought that that's what I'd be wearing too. I got into my fitting and the costume designer was like, no, that's for, I have a transition later in the show, which is transition into Flag Maker, which I'm going off to war. So that makes more sense because that's for the Revolutionary War. So technically it would just be super incorrect because the 1776 is 200 years later. So they don't wear these clothes for 200 more years.
That
so
is
I have a little, I have a little
dramaturgy, dude.
It is. So I got a little helmet that I wear at the beginning and then I kind of carry because I'm the conquistador, but we're in blacks for the beginning. So,
yeah. Well, I guess it says the year in the title of the name of the song.
Flag Maker 1776. On the deck of a Spanish sailing ship, I don't think has the... Oh, maybe it says 1492 after.
Oh, we were saying different things. Sorry. I thought you were talking about like the flag was made 200 years before. And I was like, that is specific as hell. I thought it was Betsy Ross.
Well, we do have the flag, yeah, that...
Yeah. It's Betsy Ross, the flag maker, 1776.
Right. Waving Betsy Ross's flag higher.
There it is.
But I would imagine as well that that was what I was wearing. I was expecting tri-cornered hat.
Yeah.
But I put the costume on and just immediately was like, I'm taking this horse by the reins, making red coats, red and white bloodstains!
Perfect.
But it's good. It's a cool costume. It's a fun show. It's... The first show that I've done in a long time that is sub 2 hours,
yeah.
I think it clocks in at 90 minutes, maybe less, like 45 minute acts with 10 minute intermission. And after the first show that I did in college, Being Into the Woods, where that would just be act one.
Yeah.
Like it is noise. We finished. And I'm like, oh, okay. Ooh, and after Spanish already. Sailing Ship, I just, you know, sing back up and have little things and transition and minor things, but it's nothing like big like that. So I'll get a video from the archives and send it over. Evidently, we're not live streaming, which I think I said last week or maybe told you, so which is just complete cap. That show is not licensed for live streaming, so that's why we can't. But I'll have the archival footage that they'll use the same cameras and stuff that they have set up.
So you don't have any other solos in that? Or are you sing? I thought I saw you singing the duet with Woman 2 and Act in like the second half.
Who's singing She Cries? That got cut. We cut She Cries and
Perqué
Steam Train.
I understand Steam Train.
For different
reasons. I
don't understand
She Cries.
I don't know that song well enough to tell you why it was a directorial choice. There's really cool directorial choices in this show.
I'm going to have a conversation with Tom about this.
Yeah, props to the director for this show, because there's certain things that I'm like, oh. I will say King of the World is really cool.
You told me about it. I'm not going to spoil it for anyone who's going to see, but it's really cool.
We gotta get into the thing that is Broadway.
Yeah,
I got two fast facts.
The document,
my
please,
bad.
My
Let
friend.
Me share this with Liam Ellis at Yee. Wagner.
If you guys want to email me, my school address, liam.ellis@wagner.edu. Hit me up. Send me anything. Fan right. mail.
Cast yep. him. Fat Ham opened on Broadway, and so did Camelot.
Woo!
Let's go. The Tony Awards Committee has made a second batch of rulings to make more eligibility decisions, but this time for Between Riverside and Crazy, Pictures from Home, A Doll's House, Parade, Dancin', Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street, and Bad Cinderella. None of these decisions were surprising, but the two that are actor-based are as follows. Between Riverside and Crazy, Stephen McKinley Henderson and Lynady Hanau from Bad Cinderella are going to be considered for lead actor and leading actress, respectively. In a musical, of course. So those people just weren't billed above the title. So they're now considered for that. The other thing to kind of come out of this week is allegedly Alex Newell, who uses all pronouns, who identifies as non-binary, is submitting for featured actor in a musical, which throws a wrench in things because everyone was assuming that since Alex is playing a cisgendered woman in the show, that she would submit herself for featured actress because that's the part that she's playing. But instead, Alex is submitting herself for actor. So that means Bonnie Milligan, who her and Bonnie Milligan are going to like fight for featured actress. It's a yeah. whole other story.
Yeah.
It's a whole other story.
Who else is up for featured actor? Is that the Anthony
featured
track?
Actor?
Yeah.
Featured actor. That... I was seeing a lot of Gaten Matarazzo.
Oh,
I was
gross.
Seeing.
No, wait, that person is going to be featured?
Evidently, he says he's really good as Tobias.
No, I'm sure he's good as Tobias. I just would consider him supporting. I would think Anthony is.
That's featured is anything that isn't is between the ensemble and leading.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess Hamilton had like 16 people nominated.
Oh, yeah. From their ensemble, I think, was for feature too. I think Ariana DeBose was nominated. If I can remember, that might be wrong. I have Ariana DeBose news coming. That's loading. But I don't remember that. The featured categories I'm paying less attention to. I could tell you right now who's nominated for featured or for leading actress. Victoria Clark. Stop, wait.
Annaleigh Ashford. There we go.
Victoria Clark, Annaleigh Ashford, and Michaela Diamond. And no one else matters. None of yeah. them matter. No one else yeah. matters. That's
and the thing.
That's it.
Beyond, without seeing Kimberly Akimbo, because I don't care. It's between Annaleigh Ashford and Michaela Diamond. All respect.
So what happened was,
Kimberly Akimbo
opened, and mm-hmm. everyone was like, "Victoria Clark, you have this on lock, girlfriend."
Mm-hmm.
And then Sweeney Todd opened, and Parade opened, and we were like, "Oh."
Maybe this was not the year.
So
it's
was
like
hearing...
the shows that opened when Hamilton opened. I'm like, you could have won so many more if you just did yeah. this 9 months earlier.
No, exactly. And so I was also seeing a conversation on TikTok that allegedly Parade was trying to submit Michaela Diamond for featured actress because the more Tonys that they win, the more that their show will sell. Mm-hmm. And they know that Michaela Diamond has some freaking competition. She is so worthy of an award. I think if she was put in the featured actress category, she will win it.
Yeah.
Which is probably their thought process, but she's not featured. She's the leading role, and she's billed above the title. So it, like, it takes a lot to reverse that call. It's like in sports when you have to challenge the call on the field. There has to be enough to reverse that call that was made. The call on the field is she's a leading actress.
Yeah.
To reverse that call, you need more. You need a good case, and they lost. So
yeah, well, because you can't bill someone. I know it's exactly the way you phrased it, but you cannot have someone above the title of the show, Ben Platt and Michaela Diamond in Parade.
Right.
Who else? I don't know the show really well. What other girls are in that show?
That could be considered for leading actress?
Yeah.
None.
Exactly.
It's really male dominated. Like, there's some that you could consider like for like leading actor, even though they're not, you could consider like a few characters, but they're really just featured. I would really like Alex Joseph Grayson, who is in Parade, who sings who plays his character's name slipping my mind, but he's really good. He's one of the best parts of the show. I would love for him to get a nod for featured actor because he's really good. He was the Jack understudy for the Into the Woods revival. In the Into the Woods revival is probably the most clear example we have of people billed above the title that their characters are featured.
Yeah,
like Philip Asu, Joshua Henry, Gavin Creel, like all these people who probably a few of them are going to be nominated this year in that featured category. I was seeing Philip Asu. I was seeing maybe Gavin Creel. I would personally love to see some Gavin Creel up in there. Third Tony representation, because he's won one and been nominated for another.
Wait a minute. Is Camelot eligible?
Yes. Philip Asu could compete with herself. But I think she'd be leading. I think she's leading for Camelot. Let me see. I think she's billed above because Camelot, I don't think, was in this round of decisions because their opening night just happened. No, the decisions that I just read are she's a leading actress. So
she is could. Leading.
I don't know if this might be a cool fact check, but has anyone ever won two Tony Awards in the same season as an actor?
I think definitely someone who's won two Tonys
for leading and feature
has won leading and feature.
I mean actor winning, like Stephen Sondheim, yes, but
yeah.
But I mean an actor winning more than one, that'd be cool. She's not. I would be surprised if she's even nominated for both, so we'll see.
I don't know. I feel
Camelot, we're gonna get into the reviews of Camelot. But I'll also jump ahead to what I was saying before. It was announced last week that Ariana DeBose will return this year to host the 76th annual Tony Awards. This comes after she hosted the Tonys last year, as well as famously opening the 2023 BAFTAs. There's been so many people to host the Tony Awards more than once, more than twice, more than three times. There's been a few. And I thought Ariana DeBose was really good last year. I thought her everything she brought to the awards and to everything that a host needs to embody was really good. I just don't. I thought that the opportunity to have Lin-Manuel Miranda host the Tonys, since it's in Washington Heights, was way too great to not pass up. And so for that reason, I was disappointed with this.
I'm right there with you.
I don't like Ariana DeBose. Don't do that. She's amazing. I'm sure it's going to be great. I just thought, I don't know. I thought because this is special and we moved out of Radio City, at least for this year, that we could spice it up a little bit. But it's fine. It's whatever. I see you typing away. I don't know if you found anything.
No, I was looking for your notes. Sorry.
Well, in that case, I will get into the reviews for Camelot. Cue the music. We don't have music. So this is from the review aggregator site, DidTheyLikeIt.com, which gave it 4 positive reviews, 7 mixed reviews, and 4 negative reviews. So we went 4-7-4, which is a very clear-cut mix. 4 positive, 4 negative, and then 7 in the middle. So that's kind of exactly what I was hearing with this show, is a lot of people were like, this is good. A lot of people were like, this is bad. And a lot of people were like, this is mid. I'm going to start with the bad. Jesse Green of the New York Times gave it a bad review. Neither content to be agreeable piffle, nor ready to be Sondheim-esque psychodrama, it aims for a middle path welding Arthur's romantic life with a free-spirited queen to his rethinking of governance with a reluctant gentry. Both fail, as does this show, in a way that Brigadoon, the team's 1947 hit, Aiming Lower, does not. The mixed review, Greg Evans of Deadline, says, if the acting is a shade less satisfying than the singing, it's mostly the result of the production's overall conception. A conception that isn't just unjustifiable, just more swing and a miss. And I will pick a positive review, which is, let me go David Gordon of Theater Mania, which says, indeed, this Camelot, which I admittedly could not muster up much enthusiasm for upon entering the Vivian Beaumont Theater, was surprisingly engaging. It feels like binging four episodes of The West Wing with a handful of extremely pretty songs that are gorgeously delivered by the 27-person cast and 30-player orchestra. So it's just a preference thing, I think, with Camelot this time around. I thought Jordan Donica, the one video that I saw, was incredible, which I think will garner him a Tony nomination, assuming that his performance is that good, alongside Ben Platt and others. I don't know who else would be nominated. Maybe Brian Darcy James, but I doubt it.
Josh Groban?
Anyone? And Josh Groban, thank you. Yes.
Gavin, you're forgetting about Sweeney today.
I'd be all over the place. I'd be forgetting about Sweeney, which I'm famously very pro Annalee Ashford. When we do our Tony ballots, you betcha that's going to be on it.
Yeah, well, you're on the plane.
I can't wait. I get there the day before, so I'll have a day. We'll set up. We'll be on Zoom or whatever, and we'll watch. You'll be back, which will be nice. You'll be back. Next up, Netflix is making a screen adaptation of The Piano Lesson, and it was announced that Samuel L. Jackson and John David Washington are going to reprise their roles from the stage version. Cool.
Great.
Love it. Shucked released another song to tease their album release, so you can now stream Somebody Will, sung by Andrew Durand. I will say, Andrew Durand plays he's neither a protagonist nor antagonist, in my opinion. He's kind of like a mid-tagonist. You just really don't... His character's like not a terrible person, but you don't love him.
Yeah.
And this guy himself, I've never agreed with the term, like, I got the ick. Because I don't like that. I don't like that.
Yeah.
Every time I hear it, I'm like, no, don't say that. But this guy just makes me feel so weird. And it's not that I don't like him or his performance. This is not a personal attack on Andrew Durand. It's more the character and just kind of the way it's written. As I'm like, what were we going for with this character? Because he's not funny, but he's not funny. And he's not mean, but he's not nice. And it's just, he has this one song where he's like, and it's just interesting.
I haven't seen it, and I still don't know anything about this show. Yeah. So
I think you'd enjoy it.
I feel like I would.
Mm-hmm. No, but go listen to this song. It is not as good as Independently Owned, which is making its waves through the theater community right now. If you haven't, have you listened to Independently Owned yet with Alex Mott?
I have. Yeah.
Which everyone loves that song. And that's the song that gets a standing ovation after, like, in the middle of Act One for like 5 minutes. If Alex Newell is not nominated for this, I'd be really surprised.
Write another song.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Write another song.
It's done and dusted.
Just give someone else's song to Alex. That wouldn't make sense. But like, I don't know. There's so many. The lead in this show, she has like 7 ballads. And by the third or fourth, I was like, I don't need this. The show's great. That's fun. Okay.
Hit me.
You ready? Phantom of the Opera. Closed.
What?
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
Phantom of the Opera closed, and there was quite a bit of news to come out of this weekend. Starting with the producer, Cameron McIntosh, teasing touring and Broadway productions, returns of the show. A revival is coming. It's coming back to New York. Andrew Lloyd Webber went on Fallon last night and was like, ooh, the Phantom's... They did a little bit where it's like, oh, you got a letter from the Phantom! Ah! It's like, I'm so fond of New York City. I will be back. Because, you know, Andrew Lloyd Webber, and I've seen quite a few interviews because he is all over everything this week.
Yeah.
So many interviews in which he's like, you know, I'm just terribly disappointed because the show could have run for so much longer. And it's like,
he's pissed. He wanted to get to 14,000 performances, as they should have. What are they thinking?
Not cool.
19 more performances.
His argument that he had on Jimmy Kimmel yesterday, on Fallon yesterday, was he was like, a new audience is finding the show. A younger audience is finding the show. And it's like, what? Like, there wasn't like a gap in which you either love Phantom because you're old and then like we love it because we're young. It's just like all theater people like it. And there's always going to be young people. And maybe, they're probably going to like your show because it's a well-written show.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Mayor Eric Adams presented Andrew Lloyd Webber with a key to the city of New York. No relation that I could find to the producer of the show, Cameron McIntosh, who I just mentioned. He had to step in for the final performance of the show as the Phantom, as Ben Crawford was sidelined with a bacterial infection and on mandated vocal rest by his doctor. Lyard McIntosh has done this plenty of times, so he's fine. Finally, Phantom is selling playbills from closing night for $20 on the Playbill store. Yeah, they're going to squeeze this towel as much as they can. Chicago is now the longest running active show on Broadway. 13,981 performances of Phantom. The original Broadway cast album is a quadruple platinum and best-selling cast recording of all time. 27 full-time musicians are in the pit of Phantom of the Opera, with 11 of them since opening.
Oh my God.
It's the largest generator of income and jobs on Broadway and U.S. theatrical history. It's the end of an era. Today's the second day. Today's day two with no Phantom.
Day two, no Phantom. How are we feeling?
No different.
Yeah, I'm waiting, 5 days from now for when they announce the
I give it sub 2 years for a new revival.
Yeah.
2025 Tony Awards.
Yeah.
Oh, a Phantom revival? Oh my God. And then they're back up and eligible for all of these nominations again.
The issue is, my God. Like, my thing is, why tease that if you had reason enough to close? Because what do you do? It's not a revival. It's like what happened after COVID. It's the same damn show.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a reimagining of Phantom. What are you going to add to it?
Evidently, they're bringing in the stripped-down version of the tour that's more manageable, cheaper, and won't get, like COVID won't kill this one. So, I don't know. There are now only 5 active running best musicals. Let's see if we can name them all. Moulin Rouge, Book of Mormon,
Hamilton. I can't.
Wicked.
Lion King.
Lion King Wing? Yeah, that's 5. I think that's it.
Do you know that it's 5?
Hades Town. Nope, this is wrong then. Hades Town makes 6.
Maybe one of them didn't win then.
Wicked didn't win Best Musical.
Ah. Oh, I remember that. What beat Wicked?
I'm looking.
Some garbage. I remember I heard that and I was like, what?
It won the Grammy, it looks like, for...
Great.
Yeah, but I don't need that. The original show was nominated for 10 Tony Awards, winning 3, including Best Actress for Indina Menzel. That's right. Avenue Q won over Wicked, famously. I can't believe that slipped my mind. I forgot about that. Which is such a debate. I personally, in having to pick Avenue Q or Wicked, I don't know. I would need to see them and then make a decision. I've seen both.
You couldn't see them now, though, because Avenue Q can't be done anymore. Like, I don't hear of anyone doing that show because all of the comedy is, like, not really kosher anymore.
Yeah.
I think it's funny. It's just, like, it's hard to get people in the seats and then hear, like, everyone's racist.
Right.
Like, that song is hilarious.
It's for a specific audience. And yeah. I think that's what sucks about Broadway these days is you need to appeal to more than that, or else your show doesn't run very long. Like we just
and that's
saw
why
with...
we get these pieces of hot garbage that are all jukeboxes.
Yes.
Anyway,
that's right.
Camelot is.
So I forgot. I that always says to my mind that Wicked. You just assume that it won Best Musical, but it didn't. And Avenue Q was what beat it, which is crazy. It doesn't matter at this point at all. Wicked had the last laugh, of course.
Yeah.
It's just so interesting. Speaking of Camelot, which I probably should have put this in before, they're releasing a cast recording on June 2nd with the cast from the Lincoln Center Revival. Love it. That's so long from now. So I'm going to forget about that until it comes out.
One thing about Camelot that I forgot to talk about when we were talking about the reviews. I think it's a big thing with revivals, as I was talking about with Phantom, where like it has to be different. One of the reviews was talking about, like, I couldn't be excited about this because why? Nobody asked for this. Nobody's like, I love Camelot. Please, please bring it back.
Hey, there's folks out there.
I know, and they're 95, and that's fine. But like,
and they're yeah.
Camelot is a great show. There's a lot of really good music from that show. But if you're gonna warrant this huge, expensive production, something needs to be different. Something needs to happen. And revivals, for me, are not. Like, revivals shouldn't be a high school getting the rights to do the show, and then they do the exact...
Yeah, revivals are not the time to change nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, when your choreographer is like, we're going to do the Broadway choreo.
Yeah.
And it just means that, like, that's what works best, and it's not their job to reinvent choreo for something.
Yeah.
Like, it's not an instance of Chorus Line.
I was just going to say, that's the only show that, there's certain shows that
I don't want,
like,
to see new choreo.
Right.
That's the iconic choreo. I can't tell you much else about that
but
show.
Like Shrek, but like Shrek, do something else.
I don't need the same like Freak Flag thing where they're like,
Where they're like
feeling the shoulder thing. Yeah. You know. Like, give me new choreo. Find a new choreographer who has never seen the show.
That'd be interesting. That'd be interesting. No one has ever seen
that's
the show.
That's how it should
fully
be. That's why, like,
it'd be cool.
Since they still haven't posted the announcement, even though it's been 16 years at this point, so I can't say what I'm doing this summer, but
Liam's doing something this summer, breaking.
Oh my God, breaking news! The show I'm doing this summer, I'm going to learn all the music from the sheet music, and I'm not going to watch any of it. It's just like a trial run for real life.
You're not going to listen? Like, you're not going to listen or anything?
No, because I've seen it once.
Yeah.
With my favorite actor playing this part.
That's interesting.
Anyone knows?
I thought your favorite actor was Alex Brightman.
It's split between the two of them.
Oh, okay.
I think for
we
got to
get
parts,
him on.
Oh my God.
I have news. So cool. I have. We'll talk.
You have news about Alex Brightman?
Not off air news.
Oh.
We'll talk.
We'll continue now.
But the 2016 documentary, The Best Worst Thing That Could Have Happened, which is a behind-the-scenes look into the OG Broadway production of Merrily We Roll Along, is going to be on streaming platforms starting May 23rd. It'll be on Apple TV, Amazon, Vudu, Vimeo On Demand, Google Play, and YouTube Movies.
It's going to be on Vudu, yay!
Vudu!
Is this, like, available already to buy? Because I want to watch that, like, tonight. That
yeah, 2016.
Awesome.
Look it up. You can... I don't know. I got Apple TV and Amazon.
That really is a Sondheim title.
So,
best worst thing that could have happened.
Totally. Totally. I also wanted to plug, if you are in the area at Oberlin University, or Oberlin College, I should say, our good friend Finn Samperell is hosting an event called Finn's 50th Fuck, and it's spelled P-H-I-N's P-H-50th P-H-U-G. Oh, and this is the description. Finn says the F word at Oberlin for the 50th time, live on stage, Friday, April 21st, with guest appearances from a bunch of friends. I asked if it's going to be live streamed, but he instead said there will be a video. I want to play the audio on here because I'm very excited for Finn's 50th fuck.
How does he know?
He famously doesn't say that word very often. Knowing him, he's kept a tally in his head of how many times he's ever said it, but he's going to say it for the 50th time. Finn's 50th. Like, it's just perfect. It sums him up as a person so well.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Love that guy.
It's awesome. We talked about the Muhammad Ali musical on here before, but now we got some more news. Richard Willis, the lead producer of Ali, has announced that the production will have its world premiere in Louisville in fall of 2024 at the Kentucky Center for the Performing Arts. So cool. I will be so intrigued by this musical if it makes it to Broadway. This could be the second fighting musical of the 24-25 season, or assuming Karate Kid is in the season that is not coming up now, and it's the one after, or maybe it's this one. It's cool. Love it. I apologize. I forgot to do reviews for Shucked last week, and I wanted to do a review recap. I don't know why I didn't. I just completely forgot. From the review aggregator site, DidTheyLikeIt.com, they got 12 thumbs up, 3 thumbs middle, and 0 negative reviews.
Wow! Oh,
reviews for Shucked.
Give it up. Okay, perfect.
Awesome. I'm going to read... I like reading Jesse Green of the New York Times because it's the New York Times and it's the New York Times. Jesse Green of the New York Times had a mixed review. For more than 2 hours, it pelts you with piffle so egregious. Not just puns, but also dad jokes. Double entendres and booby-trapped one-liners. That forced into submission, you eventually give in. His sounds like it was like, I didn't want to like it, but I did, so that's why he's mixed. And then I'll read one or two more. Brittany Samuel from Broadway News gave it a thumbs up. The Ritterist new work with a book by Robert Horn, Nabs, acoustic inspiration from country music and tonal humor from shows like The Book of Mormon and Tootsie, the latter of which Horn adapted for stage, to form a delirious production that treats a seasonal crop, corn, more like the Second Coming. The last one I'll read is Greg Evans of Deadline, who says, together this trio is a match made in some bizarro Broadway cornfield of dreams. And if the rapid-fire, aw-shucked jokes elicit groans almost as often as laughs, the ratio can't dampen the high spirits and goofy charm. So, great reviews for Shucked. Having no negative reviews, I don't really know what you would say that's negative about this show. Other than, like I said, there's too many ballads. The song choice, stupid. It won't be, yeah. I don't even think, maybe it'll, there's so many, there's a, like, Independently Owned is so good that it'll be nominated for Best Score, but it's just, like, so not cohesive enough, and it's so not, like.
So it sounds like you do have things to say about it.
I have negative things I can say about Shucked. I don't want to, but it was like, yeah, there was too many, the lead had too many ballads, that's it. The score is the only thing that I would adapt. But everything else I thought was great.
Well, you know, tell me how you really feel.
Paradise Square producer Garth Drabinsky sued Actors Equity for defamation a while ago. We talked about this.
Yawn.
And according to a ruling made by Judge Lorna G. Schofield on April 14th, the lawsuit has been dismissed. This should be the last we hear of Garth Drabinsky. He's on the Do Not Work list. I would be surprised if he's trying to do anything else in the theater sphere. Corbin Bleu is hosting the Jimmy Awards this year. It's the 14th annual. I probably should have put that in. Fast facts. Breaking news from today. The Waitress Pro Shot, starring Sarah Bareilles herself, post-pandemic, will premiere at the Tribeca Film Festival. This is probably the coolest news, at least poisonally the coolest news that we have all day, other than Phantom Closing, because that's a big deal. So I'm very excited to see this, because Waitress is such a good show. And I remember that they did this. So this at the Tribeca Film Festival, June 7th through 18th in New York City, with Sarah Bareilles from the 2021 Broadway Return. And I think that means we'll probably get this on streaming services. I would be so surprised if a huge streaming service doesn't just take it and own it and capitalize on it. And it's just there. It's like Disney Plus having Hamilton. I would be really surprised if Netflix or Hulu could even try to get in that game. Could just take this and it be theirs and you can only watch it on there. Maybe Broadway HD, but that would be stupid.
That would
be stupid because they can't
compete. Losing out on so much money.
Yeah, like Netflix needs this, I think, because this is big enough and a big enough show and everything that it should get a ton of attention. Like a ton.
I think Amazon might own Broadway HD, which might be the only reason it could go there.
That's a good question. I don't know. I do not know the ins and outs of Broadway HD, but I would imagine it's some, I don't know. Liam, it's time for the first annual Chicago Corner. What's happened in Chicago this week?
So in Chicago this week, the only headline we have is pictures from the new round of casting. That's it. That is it.
Well, that's cool.
They look great. It's the same costumes.
I forgot to format the grosses again this week.
That's okay. Well, if you want to do that, I actually have something that is breaking.
Please.
54 Below is to transition to a nonprofit status.
Whoa.
Yeah. 54 That's Below, the celebrated Times Square Cabaret venue, has transitioned to nonprofit status. This shift, after over a decade in commercial operation, will allow 54 Below to continue to celebrate Broadway, support new and emerging artists, launch new initiatives, and ensure sustainability for the club known as Broadway's Living Room in an ever-changing and ever-challenging industry. That is a quote from Chloe Rabinowitz from Broadway World.
That's that is so interesting. Yeah. I guess I didn't really think about the financials of 54 Below that much, or like what their like economic status looks like, but I'm down. That's cool. Anyone
can rent it out.
Right. And that's what happens with like everything that goes on in there that isn't like real. And that's just like 54 Below sings Barbie.
Yeah. Hey, the Barbie one was pretty big.
It was pretty big. But it's like the ones that you're like, I didn't know that was a thing.
They're also I don't know if they're launching this, but this article mentions this ticket subsidy initiative. Okay. 54 Below has been and remains committed to opening its doors to an economically diverse audience of all ages and backgrounds. The ticket subsidy initiative will raise funds necessary to provide discounted tickets to the public and will seek funding to launch a new program of offering discounts. Launch a new program of offering discounted tickets to audience members under the age of 35.
That's awesome. I'm down. Yeah. Very cool.
Give me a discount. I love it.
Dude, give me a discount. I'm just trying to get the gross percentage up here so that we can move on to the best section.
I got
part.
Even more.
There's more breaking news?
No, but it's more about this article is so interesting. Sorry. There's also an artist subsidy initiative. The artist subsidy initiative will seek to provide artists, including many who normally cannot afford to fund the basic production costs necessary to mount a production, with the means to address issues such as adequate artistic compensation, rehearsal space rentals, music preparation materials, and other costs involved in the creation of performances. Beginning in the fall of 2023, on a limited basis and expanding as funds are raised, artists will be invited to apply for a $500 grant for a specific show through a simple application process.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. 54 Below's doing it.
Yeah, this is awesome. Yes. This is why nonprofits for art are the thing. Like
they're
this
the
is
thing.
What they need to be. They're the thing, man.
It's just a haven for like Broadway peeps, especially financially. Like that's awesome. Love it.
My god, they're launching a live streaming initiative too.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My god.
So some changes.
This is great.
So
this
basically
is great.
54 Below is just making a bunch of changes, which is really awesome.
Well, I think these are all things they couldn't do as a for-profit company.
Yeah.
They weren't making enough money to...
Which they shouldn't be for-profit, because 54 Below, like, what are they going to do? Like, seriously. No. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited. Like, I think that's awesome.
That's so fun.
I think you said that all perfectly. So we can pivot to the best part of the show.
Man, that's gross.
It's so gross. This was a pretty gross week. It was pretty negative just because we had a necessarily good week in the grosses last week. At a glance, we had... I think only one new show joined us, which was Prima Fasci, which came in at 7 performances and $889,000, which, I'll take it. That's pretty good, especially for a play. They were at 98% of their capacity, which is also really good. And yeah, overall, no real... I don't know how you would complain about an opening week like that, especially for a play. The shows sell out this week were Hamilton. There's not many. Hamilton, Sweeney Todd, and The Phantom of the Opera. The Phantom of the Opera's gross was not above $4 million, which I really thought it would be. It was more than last week, 2.5% more than last week, to come in at $3,739,934. They were close. I really thought they could push over that four. They weren't selling tickets for like the last two shows.
Yeah,
they
I
were
was
like,
about to say.
Invite only. Like, Lin-Manuel Miranda didn't pay to go to the last performance.
No.
So.
Well, and I think the charity one, they couldn't count it as a ticket. So you paid for your ticket, and then anything extra was your donation.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. Because you can't be like, it's a charity performance. Also, your ticket's $300.
Yeah.
That doesn't work. These shows do almost sell out this week, which is above 98%. We're at Hadestown, MJ the Michael Jackson Musical, Moulin Rouge, Prima Facie, and Wicked. So, I mean, I think overall we were just at a down week, also in the sense that shows weren't selling as well. Every show had a negative week over week in house capacity, except for Camelot, which is up 2%. You have to garner that being opening night. They did drop 12, almost 13% in grosses, but again, opening comp tickets, things like that, you pretty much lose an entire performance. The show that had the most empty house this week was 58% at Leopoldstadt, which we were really, really high on. I mean, maybe a month ago, a month and a half ago, they were doing really well. And they've just been absolutely floundering here. They're super on scary watch. And yeah, it's just not great. Interesting. I think Broadway World might have screwed up here with Thanksgiving Play. I'm going to go back to their original. So I think they might have messed up with the grosses here. It says that the Thanksgiving Play grossed $167 this week, which probably isn't true if I had to guess, because it says they played 8 previews. And their house capacity was up 8.41%. But I'm going to guess that's $167,000-something. Not $167, because right now it says they lost. I was like, oh, why does it say their grosses were down 100%? That's why. I was like, that's wrong. So someone at Broadway World's about to get a talking to. That's interesting. That's what happens when we pull the grosses right when they come out. The other shows to have really high gross, Wicked was at $2.2 million. The Lion King was at $2.8. I don't think anything else was over $2, but Hamilton was over $2. But a good week, a really good week. I would like to check in on Parade. Let me check out what they're doing. Pretty much broke even, but last week down $7,000, which for them is less than 1%. And their ticket sales were down 2%, which is really also fine because they were just about sold out last week. So I ain't really worried about it.
Yeah.
Goodnight Oscar had the largest week over week in gross increase, but they did play more performances than they did last week. So, you know, that kind of makes sense. Other things to notice. Chicago's grosses were down 21%. They're the longest show running on Broadway right now. So step it up, Chicago. If you want to continue that legacy, we've also seen that this is just a tourist show, and this was obviously not a week for tourism. Their house capacity also dropped 16%, so that's kind of what happened. They just didn't sell tickets this week, as many tickets. One thing to notice is Moulin Rouge sold out just about like they did last week, but their grosses were down 19%, so Moulin Rouge was selling them cheap tickets. Still very excited for the sing-along, personally. Liam, do you want to guess what the most expensive show to go see this week was?
And it will be a guess because it won't let me open the grosses.
It's very self-explanatory.
Oh, Phantom.
Yes. Do you want to take a guess as to how expensive the top ticket sold this week was? It is shattering the record of Gavin McBee Mystery.
$1,200.
More.
What? 15?
1,498!
Oh my god.
What? I said
that is how much Lynn paid for the show.
Probably.
To go see it.
I am seeing Phantom and it is so expensive.
Man, what are these prices?
I said last week, I was like, get ready for the top ticket next week because it is gonna be stupid.
Oh my god.
It is. It's very stupid. But it makes sense. It's the final, and I'm sure a lot of that went to charity. I don't know how that works. If you can count that as like revenue, if they're just donating it, or if they actually charge this for like a front row seat for closing night.
Well, I think that's why their grosses aren't up an insane amount, because they only sold the same amount as they did.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Their revenue was the same because everything over what they would normally make was a donation.
Right. It's just so interesting. I am very intrigued, if you might, to see what this effect has on overall Broadway gross, because Phantom has been such a staple for the past so many years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. Overall, we had one show join us this week, which was Prima Facie, like I talked about before. Gross was just about the same as last week, down 1%, but that's not anything. Attendance was up 1% from last week, and ticket average was down 1%. So we really, overall, had the same week as last week. In total, most shows had a negative week. There was just like a few shows that had really good weeks. Peter Pan Goes Wrong had a really good week. Pictures from Home had a really good week, which you love to see.
Yeah.
And like these shows that are in preview, Summer 1976, we just have a lot of shows running on Broadway. And I wonder if this Thanksgiving play number is skewing the data. I wonder if their computer like takes all these numbers from their end and puts them in as these total numbers. Let me go to, I'm gonna go to the Broadway League grosses, because I bet you they have the real number in there. Unless, you know, maybe they just grossed $160. They grossed $167,207. So this overall Broadway grosses number is probably correct, with it being all 1%. So yeah, cool. I'll take it. We are, at a glance, the nice thing about Broadway World's grosses is they have graphs up of 2019, 20, 21, 22, and 2023 seasons. The 2020 season stops at just about this week, it looks like, actually. Not this week. March something, week 10. But we're relatively in line with 2019, which was one of the highest grossing, if not the highest grossing season to date. And we're
That's right up there.
Last week was higher than last year's last week. This week was just slightly lower than last year's last week. Or last year's this week. But it looks good. I mean, this is a peak for sure, week 16. But I think we are in week 16. So a lot of these seem to be peaking at week 16. We really didn't have that. But this is definitely, when you look at these trends of Broadway, it starts off super high because the last week of the year is the highest grossing week for Broadway ever, always. And then it's going to drop significantly in January, and then it's kind of going to come back up, and then it's going to slowly rise until this week, and we're going to start to see a steady decline again through the summer and through everything. The summer is going to stay very consistent. It's going to stay pretty flat, but overall stay declining. And as we go from week 27 to 28, there should be a dip. And then once we get into about week 34, which is my guess about September or October, we're going to really start to see a lull there.
Yeah.
So we're right in line. I mean, nothing to be worried about here. There's still empty theaters. We're not even at like full strength. So
yeah.
Get the Palace Theater fixed, get these theaters and open and everything.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what happens next week with the overall grosses and everything.
Right, with no Phantom. So it should
no Phantom.
Overall we'll probably see a drop.
Yeah.
I just don't know how big. Losing 3 minutes, it's like losing Music Man, because this is what Music Man was grossing every week. So
yeah.
We'll see. I mean, yeah,
and it's another show that's been selling out at 100% for the last 2 months.
Yeah, just about. I mean, if it wasn't at 100, it was very, very close to it. And it was probably because they had something going on. It's also really hard to evaluate this because it's all like, Andrew Lloyd Webber was giving tickets to students and they didn't pay for them, so we don't count those or something. And we only have numbers here, but we can kind of speculate when certain things happen, why those things happened. So that's all I got for the grosses. Kind of a midweek, if you ask me. Checking on Sweeney Todd, same as last week. This show is going to recoup pretty quickly, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So Parade, I'm going to keep a tracker. I've kept a tracker on Parade, and they're staying in the low ones, which is exactly where I thought they would. I would love to see some weeks where they could push $1.5 million. They're going to come close to just barely breaking even if they only gross in the low ones, because I think the evaluation that I was seeing this past fall was that they would need to gross, let me see exactly what it is. It can recoup its $5.7 million production cost by grossing $984,000. So we're grossing more than that for 25 weeks. And they run for something like that. I think it's just about 25 weeks.
It might recoup and a little bit beyond, like a little bit.
Yeah, Parade, Broadway. I'm just going to look if their marquee has it on there, how many weeks exactly they're running for, because I don't remember. Okay, show me the marquee. because it'll recoup. That 24 weeks, and this says that they need to run for 25 weeks at 984. So we'll get that recoupment because they're not going to gross less than $1 million. It's just, you know, how much more, because this from the Broadway Journal says 25 weeks qualifying for $3 million theater production state tax credit to recoup the full capitalization, which includes reserves, advances to creatives and bonds. Basically, no one's losing money, but no one's like, we're not like actually breaking even. 32 weeks at that level. So it says at a $1.25 million gross, it could recoup the full capitalization in 15 weeks with the tax credit. So that could totally happen because they have been running at 1.2, just under $1.2 million. And they've had some weeks above that. So it says fixed weekly operating expenses before royalties for this are $659,000, which we're doubling that just about. So, okay, parade, okay. We might be sweating this at the end, but we'll see.
There's going to be a little boost in a month when all the Tony nominations mm-hmm.
and
stuff
the Tonys.
Happens.
Yeah, that's true. So they're going to recoup this. It's just how much. Again,
how far after the Tonys do they close?
September.
They close in September? Okay.
This says 24 weeks only, which I don't exactly remember.
Is a long time to say only. That is half a year.
You're right. It doesn't feel like that many weeks, but that is so just weird. Over half a year. So 6 months, and then they opened like a month ago. So September. Yeah. I think it's September like 20 something. It's cool.
I'll take it.
I would have given them my money. I would have given them my money. It's okay.
I know. They won't take it from you though, Gavin. You're not an accredited investor.
No, they won't. That's what we got for you on today's podcast of the Gavin with Liam podcast. We will talk to you same time next week.
As always.